welcome to another episode of Grassroots Chronicles. I am your co-host, Carlos Mulotaler, a.k.a. Mr. Grassroots, and along with me is Caleb Stokes, a.k.a. Mr. Communication. And joining us, as always, our producer and the man behind the scenes, Jonathan Torres, with the Yard Sign Network.
Are one of you ready to read me a bedtime story?
Well, on that note, in this episode of the Grassroots Chronicles, we will be talking about storytelling and its importance in communication and how to utilize storytelling as a tool in the grassroots world. I also want to remind all our audience that we do not endorse candidates or political parties. We are here to inform and educate individuals on how they can change their community from the grassroots level. And with no further ado, I'm going to pass it on over to Caleb, Mr. Communication, and he's going to get us started with storytelling.
Thank you, Carlos. Thank you, Jonathan. Yes, it's crucial to understand in societal change that stories actually have a purpose and stories can drive people to action. And yes, Jonathan, just like if I read a story to my young son, Rowan, to put him to bed, the purpose of that story is to get him to go to sleep. But at the same time, a lot of folks use stories in social change in order to get people to vote a certain way, sometimes to buy a certain product, support or oppose a certain campaign. And we want to unpack how to create a successful story. But before we dive into any, you know, specifics on stories, let's just talk about why. Why stories? We've mentioned this before in previous episodes, but stories are innate in us as human beings. That's how we approach the world. Like Jonathan mentioned, every night when we went to bed, my mom would read stories in order to allow us to feel comfortable and not worry about the boogeyman coming out from underneath our bed to grab us. But the same thing can be said if I'm an independent, undecided voter in 2008 and I hear a presidential candidate share a story of self. That story of self humanizes a certain person if they're running for office or promoting a campaign. And that ultimately is why we want to share stories. So many people share facts in terms of politics and grassroots activism, right? They love to whip out the numbers and the percentages, and it bores me. And it's not just me. It bores a vast majority of people to sit there and listen to all these percentages and numbers. However, if you share a story is something that's going to resonate with me, and I might remember that story for the rest of my life. I'm not going to know any difference in inflation from 5 years ago to now. I'll know it. I'm experiencing it, but I'm not going to, you know, memorize those numbers. However, if I'm talking to a friend and I hear a story about how the same salary today is not equivalent to what it was 5 years ago, and the pain that that friend is experiencing on a day-to-day level, just trying to make it, trying to get by, and 5 years ago they didn't have to worry about that. That story is something that is going to sink in with me and be with me for a long, long time, if not the rest of my life. Carlos, you have spent, what, 2.5 decades in the field, not just knocking on doors, but having genuine conversations with folks and activists that are trying to make a difference. Do you see more success when those activists or candidates with whom you work actually share a story rather than just a bunch of talking points?
Absolutely. I mean, storytelling is crucial because it's also a way of you sharing part of yourself to others on a vast audience in that particular sense. And it gives people the ability to relate to you besides just facts and numbers and data. It's a way that we relate. Like I said, it's not, like you said earlier, it's not just using story to have information related or data, but I think from the grassroots perspective and from the candidate, it's a great way for people at the door or candidates to let people in, to relate a little bit, right? And we want to be able to relate to a candidate, or if you're at the door, you want to be able to have that person behind the door, the other side, relate to you of why you're there. And no, absolutely, it's crucial. You don't have to go in and do a whole, you know, couple hours worth of storytelling, but bring a part of you that is significant to what you're trying to put across. And that really brings people in a little bit closer. They may not agree sometimes, but I think it gives people a better understanding at least where you're coming from. And I think that's a huge step when it comes to grassroots, when it comes to campaigns and politics, where the folks out there, the voters, if they can find something to connect with you about your life, and they can say, hey, you know what? I relate to that. Or it's interesting that he or she went through that experience. I never would have thought, you know, looking at them, they had gone through this. So I think it's important to try to relate stories of your life as well as why you're running for office and why you're on stage.
The goal of sharing stories is to connect with others. Absolutely. We talked about this a few episodes ago, how queuing into different audiences, queuing in eventually builds a relationship. Relationships over a period of time become trusted relationships. That's what your story of self, the story that you're sharing, should seek to accomplish, is building a trusted relationship. That's exactly what happened in 2008. So Barack Obama was a sitting senator, but he'd only been a senator for about a year and a half before he declared his candidacy for president. A lot of folks around the country, they weren't sure, who is this guy from Chicago? He's only been a senator for a short period of time. Not just what does he believe in, but who is he? And it was a great opportunity for his campaign to build strong narratives that would create trusted relationships with people. And it was through sharing a story. This is the brainchild of a guy named Marshall Ganz. Marshall Ganz is a professor of sociology at the Kennedy School at Harvard University. And he worked on President Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. And pretty much he said, look, we have someone that no one really knows. We have a blank slate, a huge opportunity to share Barack Obama's story, who he is as a human being, and allow that to cue into different audiences. And again, cues wind up building relationships, and then over a period of time, trusted relationships. So Carlos, I know it's been a hot second, but 2008 feels like 2 years ago, but it's much further away than 2 years ago. Let's go back to Barack Obama when he's running for president initially in the Democratic primary, talking about his story of self. What are some cues that he would certainly pitch in giving his story of self in order to resonate with different voters around the country?
I think one of them that I recall was somewhat of his humble beginnings. You know,
yeah.
Like, hey, I started down here and look at me now. I'm a United States senator running for the biggest office in the world. And I think that, yeah, that made a difference when he shared those humble moments of his, also a little bit of his education, you know, of his generation. And I'm sure there was a very large group of his generation that identified with some of his experiences, for better or for worse, but with his experiences at college, right? And so they made a great connection with different groups of folks in his narrative, which I have to give them credit. It wasn't just one narrative for one group of people. I think his story, it didn't connect with everybody, but it connected with enough people that identify with him and said, hey, like classically, like people say, hey, that's the kind of person I'd like to have, I could have a beer with. Right. Yeah, and exactly. As soon as you make that, hey, I could have a beer with Caleb. Hey, Caleb is in the office, man.
And what's great about Barack Obama's story of self is it's one that really has the opportunity to cue in and resonate with every single different audience around the country. You mentioned a couple big cues, the humble beginnings. Absolutely. He's a man of the people. Mm-hmm. He's experienced adversity. He understands, you know, what's going on day by day for common American families who, you know, just want to better their lives for their children. But, and another part of that is he was a community organizer, right? He was the person on the ground who understands your plight, understands your needs and difficulties, and he's going to be there fighting. So yeah, he does have that humble beginning, but he also has his education that you mentioned. He got his undergrad at Columbia. He went to Harvard Law. He was a constitutional scholar professor. I mean, this is somebody who understands, in, at least in his pitch and in his story, he understands the everyday things that families struggle with, but also he's an academic. He's a smart guy that we know we can rely on and trust. And even beyond that, like, just look at his personal story. He is of mixed race. That's a huge cue that resonates with millions of people around the country.
I was going to say that. He brought in a total different dynamic. Mm-hmm. Where he had a father, African-American father, and a white mom, Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And so he brought it into another new dynamic into this thing. Because anyway, he was breaking a lot of the traditions and molds.
Yeah,
so we say that in politics, right? For numerous reasons. But
And even like you said, speaking of his dad was an immigrant. His dad mm-hmm. immigrated, so he is the son of an immigrant. He was very close with his grandparents, specifically his grandmother. I believe they lived in Kansas. Mm-hmm. But also, a lot of what Barack Obama pitched in his story was about him being a good dad. He had two young daughters. Michelle and he really pitched that strong relationship that they had. And he's just another guy shooting basketball hoops, drinking beer, betting on March Madness. And yes, he has all of these different opinions and beliefs on policies, but if you're able to demonstrate a strong story, it humanizes an issue. It humanizes you. And people say, like Carlos mentioned, I'll go have a beer mm-hmm. with you. Carlos, what other national politicians have been as successful as Barack Obama in terms of sharing a story in a purposeful way to get an outcome? Meaning, I'm sharing this story to win election. I'm sharing this story to push an agenda and get this bill passed. Like, what's another well-known figure who's been good at sharing stories?
For me, two of my favorites, and they're both, one is from, they're both from both sides of the spectrum, opposite sides, shall I say. Bill Clinton. I've always thought that Bill Clinton was good storyteller. He identified, he looked you right in the eye, right? And he was talking, even though you might have been one person in a group of like 1,000, but you connected with him. He connected with you, right? So I think he was good in the modern, in the popular age. And also my favorite of all times is the communicator, Ronald Reagan. Yeah. I thought Ronald Reagan's stories of how he talked about things, and even in a joking manner. Sometimes he didn't necessarily tell a story, but he used a joke, right, to make a point. And guess what? Everybody in that room remembered that joke and that point. He didn't have to go around and tell an entire story about whatever he wanted. He could make a nice little joke, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, and it would stick to you forever. There's one in particular that sticks to me, and, you know, and it just, I heard it once, and it's still with me today, you know, after all these years. What is it?
Yeah, you have to tell us now.
Well, that one is when it comes, there's a gentleman in Russia, and apparently they were trying to make the difference of how things are so slow in Russia and communism, you know, it's just, it takes things forever. And so he goes and buys a car, and the guy says, well, we can't have the car. We won't have this car for another year for you. So he goes, fine, give me the date. And it's like April 15th. And he said, no, it's unacceptable. I can't accept the car on April 15th of next year. And the guy said, what are you talking about? What do you mean? He goes, that's the day the plumber comes. So everything was so slow and delayed that it was like, no, I can't pick up the car on that day, because that's when I have an appointment for the plumber to come in that day. So or something similar to that. But yeah, but it's the point is, you remember these things, right? And you remember the point of what he was trying to say.
And a joke is a story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for instance, Ronald Reagan was very different when he decided to run for president than Barack Obama, because of a great deal of the country already knew who Ronald Reagan was, whether it was because he was an actor or the governor of California. But folks already knew Ronald Reagan's story for the most part. What's interesting is, instead of sharing his personal story, the story of self, he shared others, which were jokes. So they're entirely different. he's not necessarily sharing a story in order to create a human relationship with folks. He's already hopefully having that human relationship because folks already know who he is. He's trying to tell jokes in order to create a purposeful view that the receiver would hear it. You know, USSR and America at the time obviously weren't necessarily the best of friends. So if he wanted to help support his foreign policy positions, he might tell jokes that poke holes and make fun at his opposition, meaning the USSR. So like we said, Marshall Gans did a great job building Barack Obama's story of self in the 2008 campaign. It led to election in 08 and in 2012. Stories are effective because stories humanize issues. Carlos, you and I mentioned this a few episodes ago. If I turn my television on in my office and I see that shivering chihuahua behind the steel cage, folks are going to get my quarter a day or whatever it might be, because that creates and humanizes an issue where I think about my own life. You know, what are some other examples, Carlos, that you can see, even if it's beyond politics, of someone sharing some type of story to really humanize an issue?
Well, one in particular that comes to me is like, hey, we can talk about, you know, 1.5 million children dying in Africa every year due to either hunger, lack of water, so on and so forth. But if we isolate one of those million kids and talk about a story about how the struggle of this child to get water and is susceptible to, you know, diseases and so on, it becomes a lot more, it hits the heart, right? So yeah, it's 1.5 million children. That is sad. But when you can actually isolate one particular case and tell a story to an audience, it really is relatable, because you can relate more to one person than 1.5 million in a situation like that. So, Jonathan, you want to add something to this?
Yeah, I think maybe the one that impacts us, I would say almost every single day, that very few people realize, and a friend of mine brought it to my attention every time it happens, is the sea turtle with the straw up the nose. When it comes to litter in the ocean and plastics in the ocean, it is so incredibly anecdotal. But yet, if you think about the transformation that it's had on retail, on businesses, the restaurant industry, theme parks, tourism, I mean, it just that one singular, because again, you know, what do you always say here? People say, save the turtles, save the whales, right? And, you know, a lot of this paper straw movement came from that singular turtle with straw up the nose.
You're totally right. I even look at one of my best friends in the world. When he was in the fourth grade in Miss Williams' class at Fishburne Elementary, he watched a video that dealt with turtles who were dying because of waste. Specifically, the plastic things that go around a six-pack can of Coke or beer or whatever. And it impacted him so much that today he's in his mid-30s. I was over at his house last week, and what did he do? He took the plastic piece up so it wouldn't go around the neck of turtles and wildlife, which, by the way, is a good thing. But he says that it was the video he watched in the fourth grade in Mrs. Williams' class at Fishburne Elementary that really instilled that he should do something about saving the environment or saving wild animals. And he still recycles and still cutting up all of the plastic stuff to avoid that. And that's just, it's that story and that video was successful. So, Carlos, we also mentioned human action model a few weeks ago. Ludwig von Mises, human action model. It's creating that sense of unease a vision of a better state, a path to get there. Hopefully that is what is going to be and encompass a successful story. Sense of unease, vision of a better state, path to get there. Carlos, what's an example of a story that you've seen that really kind of relies on that human action model?
I think we're living it today. Every day you see it around us on the news as part of the immigration topic that is out there. People have a sense of unease, right? And they want to go somewhere where they can have a better life, a path, you know. And I think you see that. We're hearing it. We're watching the news by the millions are have that sense of unease and looking for a better life, better pathway.
Yeah. And what we are seeing right now is a lot of families of the folks who are immigrating here, whether legally or illegally, documented, undocumented, whatever way, they are finding success when folks actually share their personal experiences and stories and why they want to come to America. And that why, again, is off of Simon Sinek's Golden Circle. So Simon Sinek wrote a great book called Start With Why. And it pretty much boils down to people don't care what you do. They care why you do it. We were talking about cues earlier. Yeah, cues create relationships and eventually build trust. Your why you exist as a human being, why you go to work every day, go to church, buy groceries for your child, whatever it might be. Everything stems off of your why. And that's your moral foundation. Your why is usually mine. For instance, is I want to be as good a parent as my mom and dad are for me. That's my why. That's who I am. So even if we disagree on numbers and facts and all these other things, if I'm sharing my story with you and we relate together in terms of what our why might be, we're going to walk away maybe knowing that we disagree with each other, but we won't hate each other. It builds that trusted relationship where even if you do disagree, you can still have that conversation. And that's something that we're missing so much in society today. We keep talking about how stories humanize things, but there's so much dehumanization in society from social media and cable news. We just need to be able to share sincere relationships. Carlos, I cut you off.
No. When I train individuals and staff and as well as volunteers, I would always tell them that when they go up to somebody's door, because that's a lot of grassroots, it's, you know, knocking on doors. It's a, you know, you knock on the door and then go, Mr. Caleb, yes. Well, my name is, you know, Carlos Mueller, and I'm here today at your door because I believe in this, or I'm, you know, make some kind of connection why you're there at their door. Don't just come out and say, hey, would you like to vote for this person? Or, you know, hey, how do you feel about this? I'm here today in your front door to ask you questions on a particular thing or why I'm doing this, because I think it's important. And I think when you can let people know right away why you're doing things, it just, people can, it's easier, it's more relatable, and it just makes a faster connection. And if people want to decide to help you or not right away, you don't have to sit there and wait forever. It's going to be pretty evident, pretty fast, if that person supports what you're doing or not, or is willing to contribute to what you're trying to accomplish.
And, you know, stories wind up being the epicenter of someone's campaign, and it should be. Because a successful story can overcome so many negative attacks and negative narratives that are pitched against you as a candidate or whatever initiative you might be supporting. Stories harness ideas, and you refute a fact with another fact. However, you can refute a fact with a story. Carlos, you and I were talking with a friend of ours recently, and she brought up a book that was entitled White Rural Rage. So it was two individuals. One is a blogger, or was a blogger for the Washington Post. The other is a political science professor at UMBC in their ivory towers. They decided to target, with facts that are totally true, about white rural America. And they decided to cherry pick all these different facts and ultimately say that white rural America is ruining democracy. And these, again, these are false narratives that I'm repeating just because it's educational, but they say that white rural America is racist, that the bigotry is outrageous. They are white nationalists, Christian nationalists, and they seek to destroy our democracy for their personal positions. It's nonsense. We hear all these facts. Sure, I'm sure I picked everything. If I wanted to come up with a list of 10 different areas where I could attack the state of Massachusetts, I certainly could cherry pick those facts. But in order to refute that nonsense, I can share my own story. You know, my wife and I lived for 2 years in 2020, 2021. Our son was born there. We lived in white rural America in Jackson County, North Carolina. And let me tell you about Jackson County. It's 76% white. It is white rural America. Only 43,000 people live in Jackson County. And guess what? It's a swing county. Barack Obama won Jackson County. I mean, there was a Democratic congressman for years before we moved there. However, if you just look at that book on white rural rage, we lived in the area that was going to wind up destroying America. Even though their cherry-picked facts might be kind of accurate, my story will overcome those facts any day. Your story can refute facts. Carlos, when was a time, because you've had to share your story hundreds of times with folks that don't know you or don't know what you're representing. What's an example of you sharing a story when you really found success cueing into a person who had never met you and maybe was a little suspect of you and what you were doing? What's an example of when you shared a story that kind of overcame that doubt?
I think a lot of times, several times this happens, especially when I train individuals, volunteers throughout the country. There was always a little bit of a doubt because they don't know. You know, they see this Hispanic man. Because my first name is Carlos, so there's no doubt about it. And some people were a little bit unease. You could sense it. And, nothing. It's okay. And so I would go on and tell my story about how the spirit of 1776 is something extremely special to me for numerous reasons. It's the year that we returned back to the United States. We returned back to the United States in 1976 for the bicentennial of this beautiful country that we live in. And so to me, that is I used it as a way of saying, hey, man, I'm just as American as anybody in this room, maybe even more. And I let people know I am a supporter of, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the office of the presidency, our flag, our armed forces, because sometimes people misjudge you, easily. And that's okay. We're human beings. You know what I'm saying? We're not programmed. And so, but I felt it was my duty and my job to bring that together. And you would see the heads nod and people would, we started to build a relationship because they started to understand who I was. And now at the same time, I became very vulnerable because when you share these things, you become very vulnerable in a room. But it was good. It was good to share that and people understood where I was coming from. And some of them became great friends.
Sometimes being vulnerable is what it takes to be a leader. And when you do share your story, it is kind of vulnerable. Like you're saying, mm-hmm. these are a lot of my wounds. These are a lot of my scars. I'm going to try to demonstrate humility and show you how you can overcome yours or learn from, connect with mine, whatever it might be. Stories are so incredibly powerful, and it should be utilized by people who are trying to initiate social change. You have been listening to the Yard Sign Network. We are getting close to wrapping up. Carlos, I saw you at the edge of your seat. Yeah. What thoughts do you have to sort of send us off tonight?
I just say, you know, I encourage people to share some of their stories with others. If anything, people will understand where you come from. They still may not agree with you, okay? And I can respect that. But at least they'll understand where you're coming from and why you make those decisions. Maybe yeah. you've had a really bad experience in life, and therefore, hey, every time I've dealt with the government, it's been this part. Well, I understand that. I've been there before. Or whatever the case may be. But also share your story. Say, let me show you where I'm coming from. These have been my experiences, or this has been my experience. This is why I see it this way, you know. And we just have to be willing to share that. We have to be also be willing to listen and be open about this, right? And not pass judgment, but get to learn, folks, and try to unite ourselves as a nation as much as possible. I would recommend for people for that to be one of their drops in the bucket to make this a better country.
Awesome. Well said. And yes, I have a lot of friends who disagree with me. I have a lot of theater friends with whom I disagree on many different issues. But when we sit down together and we share our stories and we understand our whys and what motivates us, yeah, we will disagree. But you know what? We are not evil in each other's eyes. We instead just disagree, and we might be opponents, but we will never, never be enemies, and we will never consider each other to be evil. Stories impact one another so much. It helps build connections, helps humanize you and your campaign, potentially. You've been listening to the Grassroots Chronicles at the Yard Sign Network. On behalf of Mr. Grassroots, Carlos Muehlenthaler, Mr. Producer, Jonathan Torres, we are really excited to watch you change your town, your county, your state, and our country. Again, you can find us on any place where you find your podcast, whether it's iTunes, Apple, YouTube, Spotify, we're there. Again, this is the Grassroots Chronicles at the Yard Sign Network, signing off. I'm Caleb Stokes saying, and good night.